Thank you. Thank you so much. This is a really great honor. And obviously, I've been very involved in LLM, but never have actually told the whole story or the whole picture. I've only been involved with LLM for about 2.5 years, a little over 2.5 years. I am so thankful for it. And I'll just start at the beginning. I was born in Phoenix, Arizona. My mom was 15 years old when she had me, and she was Mormon. And I don't know if you guys know, but being Mormon at 15 is not an ideal situation. It is very, very looked down upon. And I can't even say that I am a conception of star-crossed lovers. It was my mom being a wild teenager with another wild teenager and a complete accident and not really meant to be. So, of course, that isn't the representation of a good Mormon girl. So my grandma informed my mother that I would be put up for adoption. They didn't know it was me, obviously, at the time, but I would be put up for adoption. So as the story goes, they're on their way to the Mormon adoption agency to sign up, and my grandma could not find it. And she drove around aimlessly. And the story, what she says is she got lost, and she knows Phoenix like the back of her hand, and there's no way she didn't know where this building was, but she couldn't find it. It was as if it was a missing building. So she pulled over, and in her words, she said a spirit told her that she was meant to keep this baby. She was meant to keep this baby, not my mom. That's the magic words there. So from that day forward, here I am. What else could go wrong, right? So I was raised Mormon. I was raised in the Mormon church, but I can definitely say I did not believe. Some of my earliest memories, I remember going to church, and I remember being 6 years old, and I would sit in those meetings and I would look at everyone's face in the church, and I would listen to what they were saying, and I would stare at their faces, and I would wait for people to break. I would wait for people to roll their eyes or smirk or just like shake their head no, like this isn't real, because I was 6 years old and I'm like, you guys can't believe this, right? Like none of this is real. I once told a primary school teacher in church that rather than having multiple children, I wanted 8 dogs. And I'll just let you know that that did not go over very well in church. I will say I'm very thankful for this experience, because I have my own children now, and reflecting back on being raised in that childhood, I am a very patient person. And I don't know if you're what you were like when you were 6, but imagine sitting through 4 hours of church with no phones, no interactions, and you were expected to be very obedient and very patient. So I have extreme patience now, I guess you could say. In the home I grew up in, it was my grandma and grandpa, obviously, and my mother's older sister and her younger brother, my mother, and then eventually my stepdad, who married my mom. My grandma, I would consider my mom. Obviously, she's the one that kept me, right? So I always consider her my mom. My grandpa was the best grandpa anyone could ever ask for. And I like to tell people, you didn't know we were in a competition for the best grandpa, but you already lost, because I had the best grandpa in the entire world. My mom and I were never close. I never had that loving, like, this is my mom. Oh my God. When people say, oh, my mom's my best friend, I immediately inside go, oh, no, 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 no. My mom did not do drugs or drink my entire childhood. She was just a very uncomfortable person to be around. And I think now, and this is just my opinion, I think that she had some kind of unregulated mental illness and has just gone on for years. I will say that the aunt and uncle that I was raised with were some of the major influences of my life, both of which were drug addicts and alcoholics. When I hear other members talk about being thankful for the alcoholics in their life, I immediately think of them. I am so thankful for these two people. to have had them in my life. They were my break from Mormon religion. I felt the most myself around them. They gave me reality. They didn't lie to me. They didn't shove religion down my throat. And I mean, let's all be honest. I think we all really love hanging out with alcoholics sometimes. My uncle is only 13 years older than me and is more like a brother than an uncle. He's also gay. And me being the child of a teenage mother, having a gay Eagle Scout uncle couldn't have been the best, more of a better match made in heaven than anything. We are still to this day very good friends. Both my aunt and uncle were my summer babysitters, and I cannot remember a drive with them without seeing that red and white Budweiser can. My aunt drove around, mind you, this is Arizona, so this isn't something that is a common out here. They sell at something like these giant insulated cups. They're giant, they're huge, they're like this big. And if you live there, you have one with you with water or whatever all the time because it's hot as hell in Arizona. My aunt's 7-Eleven insulated cup was half Diet Coke, half rum. And if you ever made the mistake of leaning over and sipping that straw, your nose hairs would catch on fire because it was so strong. I mean, you never made that mistake again. We would go on long drives to the desert exploring, and or a neighbor would let us go to their pool for hours. I played and ran around, and they drank and smoked weed, and we talked about everything under the sun. When I was seven, my stepdad got a job offer in the Bay Area, so we moved from Arizona to California. And at this time, I had two younger sisters, and we were still going to church every Sunday. Then I turned 12. As you know, starting to be a teenager, I started pushing boundaries and exerting my independence as a teenager. I still feel my biggest issue was religion, and I did not want to go to church anymore. I was tired of Mormon BS, I'll be honest. I hated it. I like the world in reality's terms. So I snuck out and I smoked cigarettes. I didn't drink and do drugs, which is one of the reasons why I don't understand why my parents were so mad, because technically I was a really good kid, but they didn't like what I was doing. So, and all because I just didn't want to go to church anymore. The last straw my mom had was I cut an entire month of seventh grade. I got the paperwork and signed it with her signature to be on independent study for a month, completely lying about the reason. And I filled out all the paperwork, turned it in, got my packet, turned it back in, and took a month off smoking cigarettes and hanging out, jumping from friends to friends' houses, hanging out with boys from high school. And I lived a great life in seventh grade for 1 month. Of course, my mom found out. And the next morning, she threw a suitcase on my bed and said, pack everything that you can get into the suitcase because you're going to Aunt Nadine's house. Well, Aunt Nadine, she's my great aunt. She's my grandma's sister. She lives in Vernon, Arizona. Vernon, Arizona is located 25 miles east of the New Mexico border in the high desert. It is literally in the middle of nowhere. She is well known. My Aunt Nadine is well known for taking in stray children from the local Native American tribe. She was a foster mother for the White Mountain Apache tribe at the time. And when I finally got to her house, I was assigned a baby. These are not regular babies. These babies that she took in were taken from their mothers at the hospital because they were born with alcohol syndrome. If you don't know what alcohol syndrome is or have experienced it, these babies are born blind. They have delayed speech, delayed growth, and slow learning capabilities. My baby, as I refer to him, was named Jaren. He was 9 months old, but he was the size of a 5 month old. During the week, I went to seventh grade and then came home, and he was mine to care for. My aunt worked the graveyard shift at the hospital as a nurse, so I took care of him all night long. And in the morning, I handed him over to her so she could care for him while I went to school the next day. And over the weekend, he was my assignment. He was my baby, and I cared for him. I am so thankful for this experience because there is not a baby in the world I can't handle. I refer to myself as a baby whisperer. And when I finally eventually had my own children, I was probably the most confident new mother you've ever met. And when I had my son, my first son, I was holding my baby, and so he had something like congestion, and I was holding up and patting him, and the nurse comes in and she goes, I have never seen a new mom manhandle a newborn like you do. And I was like, what? Smacking a newborn baby. So I'm so thankful for this experience because it made me a better mother. And I love babies. I love newborn babies. We had another baby in our house. Her name was Talia, and she was mostly blind, but she was normal size. There was another teenager I lived with. She was my cousin. She was older than me, and she cared for Talia. Occasionally, we went to the back to the reservation for visitation. Some of the families were able to visit the babies. Some of them were not. My baby didn't have a family. There was no one that claimed him. I don't know if anyone in here has ever been to a reservation. It is not like any place you will have ever experienced. It is a world in and of itself. And the families that we visited were so affected by alcoholism. It is unimaginable. I was writing this and I was reflecting on it. And I said, all of us here in this room have been affected by alcoholism in our home. And imagine in your home, you know, it's compartmentalized. This is it. Imagine you go down a block and every single house, all the most craziest things you can imagine are happening at every single house on that street, and it's visible and it's in public and it's out there. It's not just, oh, that's that one house. It's every single house down an entire block. It is nothing. It is a level of alcoholism that I cannot be described. Later, my baby Jaren was adopted to a couple on the reservation who couldn't have children. We dropped him off and I said goodbye. I didn't cry. I just said bye. I gave him a hug and gave him to his new family. I have no idea what happened to him. I had him for almost a year, and I don't even think my aunt really knows what happened to him. My aunt, I should also say, is one of the few white women to have ever been able to adopt a native children directly from the tribe. This is really frowned upon. Years later, after I was gone, a mother showed up at her door that she had previously fostered for. It was the middle of the night, and she had her three-year-old that had my aunt had cared for and a brand new baby. She begged my aunt to take them and care for them. This mother signed away all of her rights to my aunt. She begged my aunt, and in her words said, I cannot let these children grow up like this. This is absolutely unheard of in the tribal community. And this is, I think about my aunt, I reflect on this. It was just, she had pure love and dedication to these children, and no matter what. And she taught me that. And if Al-Anon had us, if she was in Al-Anon, there's a service award, I'd nominate her because she just went above and beyond. I did eventually go back to my parents. I still struggled with the concept of religion and rules. Guess what? In the middle of eighth grade, my mom once again kicked me out. And I went to go live with my grandparents in a town called Black Canyon City, Arizona. And it is just as bad as you can imagine it could be. During this time, I met the good-looking young drug dealer of the town. I dated him from the time it was in the middle of my eighth grade to all of my ninth grade year. And my grandparents did nothing to help me. They clearly just left it to God. Turn to the church. The church will help you. Of course, I rolled my eyes at that. I went to high school and I hung out with the losers. I never got into drugs or alcohol, really. And much like the situation I lived in with my aunt, I felt like an observer. I felt like I was just doing a prison sentence for a time I didn't commit. That's what I always said to myself. I was doing this and it'll be over. It's going to be over. I don't know how. It's not permanent. This is going to be over. I made friends in high school, and being with the town weed and meth dealer wasn't the best decision of my life. I slowly but surely, the relationship became more chaotic to the point where when I was 14 years old, a 14-year-old ninth grader, it came to the point where these were things that no one should have to deal with. And a few days before the end of my ninth grade year, we got into a domestic violence dispute in the street and someone called the police on us. I went home alone and abused. And the officer that came to my house said that he was gonna take us both to jail for fighting. I told him that I did not want to go to jail. And then the cop said to me, he said this to me, "You need to get out of this town. I don't want to come back here and find you dead." I was 14. I was 3 months from turning 15. And this is what an officer was telling me. I told my grandma that night, my grandma came home and I said to her, "I can't live here anymore." So the next day was my last day of ninth grade. And when I got home from school, the car was completely packed and we drove to California. I vowed I would never be treated that way again. And I can say that I've never been in another physically abusive relationship. But of course, for reasons that we are all sitting here in this meeting tonight, the effects of addiction have set us stumbling down with our failures and all along the way to this day. By the age of 15, I was done. I was over it. And then when I was 17, my parents started drinking and not going to church anymore. Yay, my dreams have all come true, right? I finally also embraced being an atheist. By the time I was 19, I'd moved out of the house and both of my parents were in full blown alcoholism mode. My younger sisters would call and they would call me in the middle of the night hiding, and my parents would be fighting and hating each other and they didn't know what to do. And I didn't know what to do. They would tell me that there were stories of my parents bringing home like homeless looking people from the bar and letting them sleep on the couch. And my sisters, mind you, my sisters were like 10 and 14 at the time. And so they were very scared. I tried at some stages to talk to people about this, but no one ever seemed to be able to help me. At one point I tried talking to my grandma about it and she just looked at me and went with her hand like, I don't know what to do. When I tried to talk to my mom, she would yell at me and tell me that I was a bitch and I was the one that needed to go to therapy and not her. Around that same time, my most favorite uncle, who I referenced earlier, he became sober and is still a very active member in his program. He would say things to me like, "You should probably go to Al-Anon." And he would take me to meetings and I would sit and listen. And after meetings, he would introduce me to people and say, "Oh, she's a normie and she should probably go to Al-Anon." I loved going to meetings and I would relate because I was a normie. I could not relate because I was a normie, but I did love going to meetings because I loved hearing people's experiences. I also listened to a radio show. I don't know if anyone remembers this radio show. It's called Loveline. It was on the middle of the night during the week. And there was one of the hosts was Dr. Drew. And when anyone ever called to talk about their alcoholic or drug addicted loved one, he would tell them without fail, go to Al-Anon. I listened to that show from the time I was 15 till I was in my 20s. And he told every single person, go to Al-Anon. He would say, depending on the situation, don't walk, run to Al-Anon. And I should have went even back then. And one time I went to a church and I looked in the paper and I saw an ad, there was an Al-Anon meeting and I drove to, it was in Antioch at this church, but it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the meeting was at 6. And I said, "Oh, at least I tried, maybe I'll come back." And I never went back. I was probably 20 when I did this and I never went back. As the years went on, my parents kept drinking and my stepdad got into other drugs. And eventually when I was 23, they divorced and my dad disappeared. I still have no clue where he is at. And I'm 39 years old. I have no clue. He is gone. He has completely disappeared from the face of the earth. My mom has kept drinking. And when I was 23, my coping mechanism was, well, I can just leave. I can go to my own house. I don't have to deal with her anymore. If she called me while she was drunk, I would tell her, "I'm not talking to you while you're drunk." I didn't care if she got mad. I was so full of her. I was so full of it. I had no more patience for it. I just couldn't take it anymore. And if you don't know, active alcoholics really don't like when you set boundaries and really don't like honesty either. And she did not want to hear it from me. Unfortunately, I did not really have the coping tools to deal with my mom at this time. I got married. And of course, in the beginning, it was great. And there was alcohol involved. And I can definitely say I didn't drink as much as him. And I did not smoke as much weed as he did because I didn't smoke weed at all. And then I had our son and I really noticed how one-sided our relationship was. I pretty much had dedicated my entire life to him. And then now we have this son who is taking up his time. That's how I felt anyway. His drinking and smoking continued, and he isolated himself from us. And then I had my daughter, and it became abundantly clear that I was alone in this marriage. There were days where I would wake up and felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. I became sad, lonely, and only spent time doing things with my kids. And his drinking became a daily event. I was a mother of two and in a corporate sales job, and he gave me the most minimum of help when it came to parenting and our relationship. And no matter how I expressed my feelings to him, they went unheard and unacknowledged. And I was almost treated as if, how dare I ask him for help? Even to ask him to pick up a jug of milk for the baby on the way home from work was met with, no, I can't because I had a bad day. But you better believe that there was beer, cigarettes, and weed at home to soothe his pain. I left my husband for another man. I am not ashamed to say it. I did it. But I didn't know what to do, and I was desperate, and I left a marriage without any tools to help me. Surprise, surprise, the man that I left him for was also an alcoholic. And I desperately tried to go to couples counseling with him. And in one miserable session, I was watching him speak to the therapist, and I realized in looking at his face that it wasn't our relationship, it was alcohol. Every complaint I had about our relationship involved him drinking. I never made a counseling appointment again after that, but I did also didn't know what to do. And it never occurred to me to go to Al-Anon. And of course, the drinking became progressively worse, and I still just did not know what to do. A little bit after that, there was an incident at a wedding we were at that brought me to my bottom and brought me to Al-Anon. The drug and behavior hit a new level for me, and now this was public and it completely paralyzed me with confusion, anger, and disbelief that the man that I did love and he claimed to love me could act this way. I desperately went online to look up Al-Anon and what it was about, and find a meeting. Finally, after all this time, I called my uncle, the first person I could think of that knew anything about recovery and sobriety. And I remember calling him and saying, I don't understand what these abbreviations are at the end of the meeting, you know, AFG and whatever they are. And he goes, it doesn't matter. His response to me was, just go, pick a meeting and go. It doesn't matter. And I said, okay, fine. And he goes, okay, back to my very sassy gay uncle. He goes, I just got to tell you, and I quote, you're going to have to figure your own shit out. And that was what he said to me. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't care. I was going to figure my own shit out. My first meeting was the Friday night women's meeting in Concord. I cried through the entire thing. I cried when the opening was read. I definitely cried during the newcomers reading. I looked around the room. I still remember this. I looked around the room and wondered when I would stop crying. I wanted to know how some of those women in that room were not crying, because how do you just not cry 24 hours a day? I didn't get it. I didn't understand. One woman came to me after the meeting, and she just said, keep coming back. And she emphasized to me that she wasn't supposed to give suggestions or give advice, but she was going to say one thing to me, and it was, don't make any big decisions. And I just went, okay. That first meeting I was in, I was absolutely in. I felt good when I left there, and I needed to keep doing that. Yes, I'll keep coming back. It sounded easier than what I was dealing with at home. Still to this day though, that don't make any big decisions still sticks with me. And still I attend at least 2 to 5 meetings a week. 3 months after my first meeting, my partner's drunkenness became too much. And after a 24-hour period of complete drunk insanity that eventually led to his arrest, he was out of my house. I didn't have to make any decisions. The decision was made by him and the consequences of his actions. I spent the next 4 months getting a sponsor and dedicating myself to the program. I learned that the program was the thing keeping me sane and moving forward no matter what. After 5 months, my ex-partner reached out to me. We had had no contact up until this point, and he let me know that he had found sobriety. And of course, I rolled my eyes over the phone, and I told him that he needed a year of sobriety before I would even consider anything closer than a casual friendship ever again. I'm happy to report that next month he has 2 years of sobriety under him. And we have been officially together for 1 year. And no, much like the literature says, it is not perfect. The one thing that we both have now is our tool bag. He has his, I have mine. And one of my favorite things about being an Al-Anon is that we now have a common language of recovery. It's much easier to recognize those defects in our relationship and take a step back and reevaluate the situation without flying off the handle, without yelling, anything like that. And when I feel those old reactions coming back, I'm able to stop myself and reevaluate, and same with him. Or sometimes I just go, maybe you should call your sponsor and ask him that before you talk to me about that. Not the nicest way to approach it, but sometimes I say that to him. My mother still struggles with sobriety, and thanks to my program, I've learned to accept it. She has her own program and I can't do anything about it. One of the things I've learned is that when she was trying to be sober, I'm always expecting her to say sorry to me. And I have had to come to accept through my program is I may never get an amends from her ever. And that's fine. As of right now, she's sober and we have a good relationship. My favorite aunt that I talked about has passed away at the age of 54. She died before I was in program. And I was mad at her for drinking herself to death. She never got to meet my daughter. She barely met my son. I was so mad at her. I remember being at her funeral and not even crying. And I said, how dare she? How dare she do this to me? It wasn't until I was in the program that I felt the sadness of her loss. I finally felt the empathy and pain that she must have gone through to drink herself to death. And I miss her so much. In my recovery process, I found out more about my family. My grandmother opened up to me about the family disease of alcoholism. She told me that when they were in their 30s, she kicked my grandpa out of the house because he was drinking too much and they separated for 2 years. Shockingly, they had 4 young children. And at the time she couldn't take one more minute of it. She said that they finally came back together after she gave him a choice. He had to choose his family or choose drinking, and he could not have both. He chose his family. And this was an interesting point that I never heard my grandma say. And this is years later, and my grandpa passed away. And I'd already been in program for over a year. She said to me, she described him as being a dry drunk and a rageaholic after that. And by the time I was born, the rage has subsided, but the dry drunk tendencies were still there. And now that I know what I know about alcoholism and being a dry drunk, I reflect back and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I see it. I see it now. Where it wasn't maybe directed at me, but it definitely permeated my family and clearly affected my aunts and my uncles and my mom and the people around them. And my uncle, you know, described it as being emotionally and mentally abusive home when he was younger. And all the while, my grandma, hid it under the guise of a perfect Mormon family. The only active alcoholic I have in my life right now is my ex-husband. He does not live in my home, obviously, but it's adversely affecting the lives of our children. And now, as of the past few months, I bought literature, Alateen literature, and we're exploring these ideas together on a children's level. I'm able to use the literature and tools I'm learning in the program to help them navigate this experience with their father who drinks. Also, it's very glaringly clear that I'm going to be the parent of teenagers soon. My kids are only 10 and 7. I do not want to recreate my teen years. And thankfully, I have I'm a very different person than my mother was. And I know that Al-Anon's making me a better person. And I can use these tools, and I already have, and to make myself be a better mother and a stepmother. My partner has a very difficult stepchild, and I've been utilizing approaches that I've learned in Al-Anon to deal with this difficult person as well. I still consider myself an atheist. However, Al-Anon lets me have a higher power of my understanding, and I don't need to explain it to anybody else. I know a lot of newcomers struggle with this concept. I did not. I just knew there's something bigger out there than me, because clearly what I was doing wasn't working. when I really started taking in the steps, my sponsor said something to me that also has always stuck with me. She said, you know, those moments, those aha moments, just say that's your higher power. That was it. Okay, that's easy. I can do that. You don't have to put a name on it. You don't have to put a face on it. Like, that's your higher power taking over. Okay, I can agree to that. So then I started saying that the things that bring me back to sanity were my higher power. A higher power and using the tools of my recovery brings me closer to the serenity that is actually my main goal. My higher power was really put to the test earlier this year when my house was damaged through no fault of my own and I was homeless for 2 weeks. While local officials figured out what to do, my sponsor told me to get that God box out and start using it. And out of pure desperation and having nothing else to try, I would write my fears on a slip of paper and put it inside the box and move on. Some of the things I was powerless over and I needed to focus on, I needed to focus on the immediate things that I could control. The unknown was making me crazy with fear. It's not perfect, but I'm slowly achieving that goal of serenity again. I didn't come to Al-Anon to get the alcoholic in my life to stop drinking. I came to Al-Anon out of desperation. And of course, my main reason was to do something different with my life and my time and my energy. My life had been touched by many different ways that alcoholism affects you and drug abuse as well. The way I approached an alcoholic and addict in my life was not working. And from what others are saying and what Al-Anon was, it was for me, absolutely. It is not a lie with the newcomers and the newcomer's welcome where it says, this is your program. It is your recovery from the effects of the disease of alcoholism. It's 100% true. It is my program. The program has brought me clarity and sanity in my life. And the past 18 months of this pandemic and the construction nightmare that I've been living at my house were a true test of wills for me. And guess what? None of the insanity that I felt was due to drinking. It was me. It was my response to the situation because there's no one drinking in my house right now. It's just me being crazy and out of control. And I need to learn how to approach things a lot differently. I recognize them now and much faster to approach them differently than I did in the past. My goal every day is serenity, however I achieve it. And sometimes I don't get it and sometimes I do, but that is my goal. And how can I get the end of the day to feel that peace and serenity? So thank you.
Let's all